Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kratzky. It's the summer of 1863, and Union forces are on a roll. The North, with huge victories at Gettysburg and Vicksburg, suddenly has new momentum. But now stands a showdown at Chattanooga that could determine the outcome of the war. The great Civil War writer Jeff Shera joins us later on this hour to talk about his new book on this very decisive battle. But first today, civil rights, activism, and the future of race in America with Dr. Mary Frances Berry, who's been involved with activism and social issues for over four decades. She served as chairperson of the U.S. Commission for Civil Rights, was the first African-American woman to head a major research university, and she now teaches legal history at the University of Pennsylvania. She's a keynote speaker at Legal Aid's 16th annual Justice for All luncheon on Wednesday. Dr. Berry, welcome. So good to have you.
Well, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to speaking in Kansas City at the anniversary of the Legal Aid program.
And I'll be introducing you tomorrow, just so you know.
Oh, you are? I didn't know that.
Yes. Well, your talk, speaking of tomorrow, is about the lessons of the 60s. You know, 50 years later, what can the 60s teach us about, you know, civil rights and social justice? Because, you know, in so many ways, the spirit of those years seems so very far away right now.
Well, I think we can learn about the importance of people, grassroots people, organizing and engaging in direct action protest to augment litigation strategies. Litigation strategies, that is, going to court, makes sense. And Americans are historically a very litigious people. We love to say, you know, we'll sue you if something happens.
Yes.
And litigation does work. But on major social issues of our time, given our history and looking at the 60s, it took more than going to court to solve these problems.
We had to go to the streets, too.
Right. People had to go out and protest, and some risked their lives, and some people were killed, of course, went to jail in large numbers and in order to make a major social change.
But you don't see that anymore, and I'm wondering, do you think it's still within us? I mean, what's holding us back from, you know, protesting more vigorously about things like, I'm thinking about, like, income disparity in this country?
Well, in fact, you do see it. You can tell when things are really bad. You begin to see, in addition to litigation, you see protest activity again. There was the Occupy movement. Some of the people who were arrested during it just received a settlement in New York, about $600,000 for being arrested and police abuse during their protests. And Occupy occurred not just in New York, but other places around the country. We're also seeing now the minimum wage movement with people organized for a living wage all across the country. So I think that, and their students, by the way, organized on campus on the whole issue of student loans and student debt, which is exorbitant. And when they go out to work and it's hard to find a job, having this debt that's hanging on for years and years and years. So what I think is that when you see protest activity taking place, it shows that we have a major problem that takes heroic efforts to solve. It's like the miner's canary in the mine. When the canary dies, you know there's a real problem.
But it still seems to me that activism these days, it has something of a negative connotation attached to it, that we aren't about that these days nearly like we were back in the 60s, and I'm wondering why that is.
Well, we don't have as much protest activity as we had in the 60s and have it ongoing for years and years. One of the things was the historic injustices of racism in the country, which Madison or Jefferson is usually getting credit for saying. I say both, that it's America's original sin. But I think that and the people who were mobilized had tried time and time again to protest, and their ancestors had too. That wasn't the beginning of direct action protest, as historians know. But it started up again because of the conditions after World War II and in the 50s, the Supreme Court decision which in fact was a response to worldwide criticism of the United States and its racial problem.
Mm-hmm.
In a world where new African countries were coming into independence, and in Asia countries were coming into independence, and there was a struggle that they called a political struggle at that time between, for the minds and hearts of men in the developing world, they met in these new countries between communism and democracy, the Soviet Union and us. And so all of these international factors and the experiences of people gave rise to the notion that it was time to do something and to do something more, and leadership emerged. You can't have a protest movement without people organized in the streets and willing to take risk, but you also can't have it if you don't have leaders.
Yeah.
And leaders are not born. They are selected or made, and there was a coterie of people who were willing to take risks and were courageous and did do this. So the problems were enormous. They had been enormous for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But the social conditions in which this could emerge occurred at that time. The other point I wanted to make is that the legal services, which I'll make tomorrow,
right,
talk, legal services grew out of this struggle in the 60s. One of the arguments was that if people could see that their rights were vindicated in the justice system, it wouldn't be necessary to keep going to the streets and taking all of those risks. And also, capitalism, which is our free enterprise system in this country, doesn't like chaos and disorder. You can't do business very well under those circumstances. And so if people can be shown that they can vindicate rights in the courts, then they have an avenue for relief.
We're visiting with civil rights leader Dr. Mary Frances Berry. She'll be the keynote speaker at Legal Aid's 16th annual Justice for All Luncheon. That's tomorrow at 11:30 in the morning at the Marriott Muehlbach downtown, 1213 Baltimore Street. More information on our website, kcur.org. Now, Dr. Berry, you were famously were dismissed from the Civil Rights Commission by President Ronald Reagan back in the 80s, and then you sued successfully to keep your position. What was it like for you to take on the Gipper?
Well, and I sometimes think that when I die, my obituary first line is
going to
say, sue President Reagan.
Yeah.
One. They probably already have it written in the Times archive.
Mm-hmm.
Waiting. But in any case, what it was like was that the Reagan administration, in response to its own constituency's concerns, decided to turn back the clock, we called it, on civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't going to enforce things like voting rights as rigorously, school segregation, employment discrimination, and a whole array of civil rights issues that the federal government had done too much and gone too far.
Mm-hmm.
And in response to that feeling on the part of their constituency, they started to neglect enforcement and to divert it in a different direction. There were a lot of issues of police-community relations at that time, too. Just as there are from time to time now.
Mm-hmm.
And the Justice Department was not doing what we thought it should do. And one of the roles of the commission was to report on how well the administration was enforcing civil rights. And we had to give them a very bad report card. and they didn't like it because and decided that they would try to convert the commission into a body that they could control. But the problem was that the commission under the law is an independent agency and was set up that way years ago by President Eisenhower, by the way, and a bipartisan group of members of Congress. And it was supposed to be a watchdog over agencies to make sure they do their jobs. I sometimes think we need more watchdogs over agencies of all types, whether it's the VA or whatever it is, to get them to do their job, IRS, whatever. But in any case, this watchdog idea wasn't very pleasant to them. So they decided they would fire some of the commissioners and replace them with people who would say that they were doing a good job.
Yeah.
And I thought that it wasn't so much me keeping the position because it's part-time and I was still a professor, but it was the principle of the thing, that if the commission can't be independent, then how in the heck is it going to report?
Yeah.
So I decided, along with a colleague, to go to court, and the the judge said that the administration was wrong because you cannot kill a watchdog for biting you, because that's what watchdogs are supposed to do.
Yeah, yeah. How happy were you when you took on Ronald Reagan and then won? Were you surprised you won that thing?
I wasn't. My students were.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I told my students that I was suing, and they said, oh, how can you sue the president? You can't beat the president of the United States. And I said, well, you know, what Lincoln said is don't be your own lawyer. So we have lawyers. I'm not bringing the case myself.
Yeah.
And secondly, I think that the statute is clear. And so we were able to win the case. We didn't. We won the battle. We didn't win the war, because mm-hmm. after that, the some other people resigned from the commission, and Congress passed a new law as a result of our fight, changing the structure of it so that the president could get some appointments on there. And since, you know, he was able to gain control for a while.
You know, and then a few years later, Dr. Barry, you know, President Clinton tapped you for chair of the commission. Did you see that as some sort of public redemption in the wake of the fight with President Reagan?
Well, I thought that I stayed on the commission and continued to dissent after they
yes.
took over. But I think when Clinton came in, I think he sort of thought this was a sort of irony, and he has a good sense of humor, too, mm-hmm. President Clinton, that here I'd been on there all this time and fighting them, and, hey, now he would just make me chair of the commission. I'd been there the longest anyway, so mm-hmm. that's what he did.
What about going forward here and poverty as an issue? How is the struggle to keep poverty at the forefront of the American conscience here different from the struggle to maintain attention for something like civil rights?
Well, it's hard to keep poverty yeah. at the forefront. Politicians usually like to talk about the great middle class. They don't like to talk about poor people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In part, it's because poor people do not vote in the same numbers
yep.
as middle class people do. So it's a political judgment. And secondly, the question is, once you say there are poor people, what do you do about it?
Mm-hmm.
So that only recently has the politicians began talking about inequality. The Occupy movement was about inequality. The minimum wage, living wage movement is about mm-hmm. inequality. The legal services has tried to take the rough edges off what happens with poor people by handling their individual cases of things like debt and so on. But it's hard to keep people. The war on poverty, we've just had a whole bunch of commemorations of Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty. And some people have asked me, you know, well, we had a war on poverty. Was Reagan right? We had a war on poverty and poverty won. Well, poverty didn't win, but our population is larger. And because of the recession that we say is over, but it actually continues to have effect on a lot of people who are out of work. Or who are underemployed. We have a lot of poor people. And now the discussion of inequality has come to the forefront again because economists are interested in it. There's a big book by an economist that most people don't read, but they keep it on their table when
yeah.
I visit somebody's house.
A lot of that going on.
I say, yeah. Have you read it? No, but there it is. You know?
Mm-hmm. Do you think this income disparity and poverty is going to be the issue that gets people off their couches and maybe back into the streets like you saw back in the 60s?
I don't know. I think that the minimum wage movement has gotten traction. In most many communities, and I think it will continue to until laws are passed to improve them. Even when they improve it, though, it doesn't seem to be enough to really support a family. But I think inequality will be talked about a little bit, and if it's like most things, by the next political campaign in 2016, they'll be talking about something else.
Yeah.
And right now, it is being eclipsed by foreign policy. And the whole question of what do we do about the Middle East and what do we do about Ukraine and
yeah.
Russia and what do we do about all these things. So that's eclipsed the discussion for now.
Dr. Mary Frances Barry will be the keynote speaker at Legal Aid's 16th annual Justice for All Luncheon. That's tomorrow at 11:30 at the Muehlbach downtown. More information on our website, kcur.org. And Dr. Barry, what a pleasure to have you. I look forward to meeting you tomorrow and introducing you before that very good group tomorrow.